How's it going and welcome to episode 51 of On The Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On The Wire Pod. And if you're listening on a platform that allows ratings and reviews, please take a second to let us know what you think. I am Adam Howe. You can follow me on the Twitter at 80 grade. That's all spelled out. Unfortunately, I am not joined this week by my normal co-host, Kevin Hastings. You should still be following him on the Twitter at Hastings Kevin. He is on a little hiatus, a little vacation in Sonoma, California, tasting some wine, eating some cheese, the things you do. And so it's behoove of me to bring in somebody who is probably in Kevin's backyard or Kevin's in his backyard at the moment. And that's very special guest, Mr. Eno Saris. Of course, can be found writing for The Athletic, podcasting regularly on Rates and Barrels, which of course you can find anywhere you're listening to this podcast. And you can follow Eno on the Twitter if you're not, if you're the one person already that's not doing it, Eno Saris. And you can find that in the show description as well, link to all of his work. Thanks, man, for taking the time to break down some stuff with me. And we're going to talk a little bit about some possible pitchers you can find off the wire in season that you might want to keep on your roster longer than just the stream. But before we get into all that, just how's the week of actual activity been treating you?
Oh, it's crazy. I just filed 5,000 words to The Athletic. I had the dumbest idea was to basically do fantasy spin and real life spin on every move since the lockout ended.
You had to do both angles, not just let somebody else do one and you take the other.
No, I thought it was a good idea because I was like, hey, it's exciting. All this stuff is happening. And then when I started doing it, I was like, wow, there are a lot of one-year deals for relievers in here. And I think one of my blurbs is like, was this a good idea?
That's it. End of thought.
Right. And I'm not sure this was a good idea. Anyway, yeah, it's also interesting, I think, in fantasy because we didn't really stop. I'm always like of two minds where I've got two jobs. I've got a beat on the real life baseball end where I'm covering what's new in terms of research and analytics and that sort of deal. I did a piece on biomechanics, and then I've got the fantasy beat that I've also do, but I felt very bifurcated, two brains, whereas like one brain fantasy was like, yeah, I'm doing my DC drafts, I'm sharing my TGFBI, like everything's going normal. And that one was just beginning to run out of steam where I was like, oh God, what's going to happen if we don't have a season or if we don't have 2 months of season? That was just starting to run out of steam. And it was really bad when that was running out of steam because the other one was like, I've had no ideas for 2 weeks. And so when they were both sides of my brain were like, oh no, that was the low point. But then thank God it was like 3 days later, we had baseball. Just, again.
And we had everything.
Like, and now it's like a fire hose of transactions.
As exciting as the last week of November was, as we saw all those transactions happening all at once, it's been, like you said, a fire hose in comparison in the last, I guess it's been almost a week now.
We're 90 days of transactions the last five.
And then as we're recording this on Tuesday, there's still a lot more out there. There's still some major players out there.
Freeman's out there.
Cassianos hasn't signed. Story. Rizzo hasn't signed. Freeman. That whole thing.
Yeah. As soon as I file my piece tomorrow, I'll be like, oh crap, another 10.
Yep. I'm not doing that again.
Yeah, I'm not doing that again. Sorry.
You got my 5,000 words.
Exactly.
All right. As you mentioned, the drafts were still happening. This was I don't know why I picked this year to be my most aggressive year in drafting. And I just finished up our GLARF, the Earth League. And I know that you're in BARF, the OG of the Earth League that was put together in different geographic areas.
I actually took Laura Michaels' spot.
Oof.
So it's a weird place to be because Laura Michaels created BARF. And it's in his honor. Like we do. I don't know exactly how you all did yours. We did ours in person. We've been doing it at a bar for a really long time. And so we have shots at like 11 a.m. to start off the league. And in a related matter, I got Ronald Acuna in the first.
Unrelated, completely unrelated. Yeah.
But we did a big toast to Laura Michaels, who's a legend in the industry.
Yes. And, oh, man. I joined GLARF for the first time this year. And I know they've been around for, I think, a year or 2 years. And I took a DVR spot. And because obviously he moved over
to your neck of the woods. And so I thought I had shoes to fill. So I feel for you jumping into Lars' spot. But that was a lot of fun. Yeah, most of the league did get together in Chicago. And I think it was 11 out of the 15 managers were there live. I unfortunately could not make the drive up from Indianapolis to Chicago for this one, but I plan on doing it next year. Yeah. I haven't done a live, as I know I'm not the only one in this boat, but I haven't done a live in-person draft in 2.5 years or something like that. And my home league that we would do live drafts is back so in Boston.
Fun, right?
Yeah. Yeah. To make that trip and like be just, it's the slow drafts that everybody's complaining about for the last couple of weeks or months pales in comparison to doing an in-person live draft with really no clock. It's like, that's the thing too. It's like, you say that there's like a 1 minute clock or 2 minute clock.
Yeah. But you have some people at home, like there's a bunch of drinking happening.
There's a bunch of conversing.
It took a while. I think it took us about 5.5 hours.
Oh, that was, we started at 1 o'clock central or 2 o'clock central and we didn't finish up until about 9:30.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's even longer than us.
It was a long, it was tough.
You're like, he's in the bathroom. We've been there for a little bit.
Yeah, the third of the Earth Leagues that was drafting on the same day as us, TARF, up down in Texas, that Kevin Hastings is part of, they flew. I don't remember the exact time, but I was watching the draft boards of all three, and they just flew through. They were the first of the three of us to be completed. More power to them for getting that done.
But obviously not enough shots.
Yeah, obviously. There's one difference, one major difference. Yeah. Let me ask you about the end of your BARF league. As you alluded to, we also finished up TGFBI.
We got one in common there.
We do.
I thought that was kind of fun.
It's same round and everything. Yeah. But these are 15-team leagues for anybody not familiar. 15-team leagues, 30 rounds. This is on the NFBC platform. So, of course, no IL spots. No, this is a FAB league, so there will be in-season moves. And this is a FAB-related podcast, so that's what we focus on most of the time. But in this section, we usually talk about moving targets. These are players that we are targeting at the end of these sort of drafts, whether they be 12 teams, 15 teams, what have you. But flyers of players that more than likely aren't going to be on your roster, maybe past April, maybe into May. But I'm curious to see, since we have these very similar drafts that complete on the same day, the logic and why you chose the players that you did based on the roster. And then I'm not going to get into a lot of I'll list them off, but I've literally talked about all these guys in the last four episodes as players that I'm targeting at the end of these types of drafts. Uh-huh. So I ended up going with MJ Melendez as a rookie prospect flyer in that catcher position with the possibility of him even moving around, as it's been alluded to, or at least alluded to by a couple, as he might actually play multiple positions. Kevin is not convinced, as the House Royals fan, that he'll see time at least early on in the season. It might take a while just because they have so many mouths to feed. I can't quit taking the Flyers, MJ Melendez, catchers, based on what he did.
Yeah. Two catcher league,
And then we'll skip Madison Bumgarner, who's the one that we had in common. It's just that anchor. But then Tyler McGill, after the Chris Bassett trade to New York, he just kept dropping and dropping. And this is my first share of McGill. I have 15 drafts, and this is my first time actually picking him up. Kevin talked about him last week, and we'll actually get to him a little bit later in the show. So I'm going to skip over him as well. And Colin McHugh, who just signed with Atlanta on a 2-year deal. Not going to be the possible closer flyer if he found the perfect situation, which is half of why I picked him. I also picked Colin McHugh as somebody that I talked about, I think last week or the week before, about the wanting to rack up the innings as much as possible. And in that first week or first 2 weeks, you're not guaranteed that all of your starters that you draft are actually going to pitch more than once in that like week and a half period, especially in that first 4-day period. And it's really pinching pennies, but any innings that you can get, any extra at-bats you can get in those first 4 days can actually be really helpful. So I don't mind grabbing an extra reliever or two in these drafts, playing them the first week, and then dropping them for whatever else I might need in the second FAB period. And then Nolan Gorman's another prospect who apparently, from reports I read today, is just blasting baseballs out of BP. But you'd love to hear that regardless. It's a lot better than the other reports you hear about shoulder soreness and elbow tightness and what have you. I'm not convinced that we'll see Nolan Gorman up at the start of the season. So he very well might be a first FAB drop for me if he's not up right away. As I believe I read him, Juan Yepez, and Lars Nootbaar, if they're not up, I think the quote I heard was, if they're not up, they're to play full time, yeah, then they won't be up.
But basically one of them wins.
Yeah, exactly. And so
I guess there could be two, but I think it'll be one.
With the DH, Nolan Gorman obviously working out as second base eligible right now, could get some third base reps just as a fill-in, but I think the opening for him would be second base in St. Louis right now, move Edmund around or whoever else they want in the middle infield. But Epez is, from everything I understand, is more of a DH only, maybe fill-in at first base every now and again, but he's a DH first bat. I don't know if you've you're obviously in tune more than most people. I don't know if you've heard anything different from.
I think Gorman, my buddy Jeff Zimmerman, is big on Gorman, I believe, and thinks he might push Edmund to short. I think because he doesn't really like either of the shortstop options there. I trained a little with Lars Nootbaar with our shirts off recently at Drivelines. I have a little bit of inside knowledge is that he's added 7 miles per hour bat speed working at Driveline over the last year and a half. And some of that you can already see in his minor league numbers. The power surged. He used to be a kind of a empty batting average type. And now he's looks like he has some real power. So what I like about Nootbaar is that I think the Cardinals would still like to have a DH that plays in the field because they like to move guys around a lot. And so I would think that Nootbaar allows them to have 4 or 5 outfielders that they can rotate some guys through if their hamstrings barking or something like that. So I think maybe Nootbaar is the kind of the guy that has like that magical mix. And this is the only difference where I see, because generally my strategy is very similar to yours. The idea is, the way I would describe it is poop or get off the potty. With your Gorman and Melendez picks, I have J.D. Davis and Jeremy Pena. Now, they're not quite the same. Pena is pretty similar to Melendez, where it's like either he's got the job or he doesn't. He's a prospect-ish type guy. J.D. Davis is similar in that either he has a job or he doesn't. Like either he's kind of the DH or traded or... it's pretty obvious. I think it'll be pretty obvious in the first week. That's what you want. That's what you were talking about. In the first week, I want to know, is this guy have a job or not? It's a little bit problematic that the week starts on Friday. I'm a little bit worried about that. But yeah. I would like to, I think with Pena, I will know. Because either Correa's re-signed with the Astros, or then I keep Pena for at least a week to see, like maybe 10 days to see how he's playing. With J.D. Davis, a little bit more problematic because the Mets might play him 2 days out of the first three. And then I'm like, what happened there?
Weekly league where you can only make the switch once a week, like on the NFBC, that's a lot tougher. In a daily league, yeah, maybe J.D. is a little bit more guaranteed a spot on your roster because you can pick and choose when he actually is going to play and you want that production. But yeah, it's tough. Like you said, I think I read today, like he was going to get most of his time at third. So at least that's a step in the right direction. But a lot of this is
good. But it all matters, like whether or not Cano plays, who actually plays DH, where McNeil plays. There's a lot of, we're going to have to figure that out quickly. But I do like the idea in my head was similar to yours, which is I should know about if I want to keep J.D. Davis or Jeremy Pena pretty early. And maybe J.D. Davis is a little bit harder to figure out and Payne is easier to figure out. And so Payne is my first drop. A lot about like Melendez. I think Melendez is either up or down. So that's, I think Payne is similar. Either they're up or down. If they're up, then you're like, wow, I just hit the jackpot. If they're down, you're like, oh, I got my first fab cut. And then I have a reliever, like you have a reliever, minus Pete Fairbanks. It was a little bit because my third reliever was Andrew Kittredge. So I tried to get 2 bites at the apple. I would actually suggest that for people. I think that's a good idea. 2 bites at the apple means you should hopefully know. With the Rays, you might not. But take 2 bites at the different apple. But like you could have a second bite at your worst closer apple. Maybe you took St. Louis and you have Giovanni Gallegos and you take Alex Reyes in the reserve rounds. Or something like that's probably possible. Where one of the lower end closers... Joe Barlow and Spores in Texas or something like that. There's ways you can do this. I like Anthony Bender in Florida. You could get Floro Bender with the last reliever and the reserve pick. Again, the nice thing is the poop or get off the potty idea, which is like either Bender's the closer or he's your first cut. I hope Fairbanks and Kittredge don't steal. I both have a save opportunity in the first
over
weekend.
The first weekend.
Yeah. Then I'll be like, grr. Bumgarner, and then the other guys I took in reserve were Paddock, Strasburg, and Bumgarner. Paddock is a little bit like either he's injured or he's not. And if he's not injured, I'm hoping he's in the rotation. And then I at least get one start and say, okay, if he's healthy and had one start in the rotation, I'm going to keep him another week and see how it goes. He's on my bench for the first week. Steven Strasburg, I want to see the velo. If it's bad velo, he could be a first week cut. I don't know. Like, and then Madison Bumgarner, I want to see the velo too. And I think Bumgarner is the one I want to keep the longest because I just see, I see in his schedule some nice weak moments where, like, hey, and also I picked Adbert Alzolay, who who's hurt. So I think Bumgarner for me was like a pick where, like, I'm going to probably slide him in for one of my starters.
You're going to feel like you're going to have to, right, at a certain point.
I feel
point.
Like he has a high floor, maybe not the highest ceiling, but he has a high floor. He's boring, probably will give you innings, probably won't be that bad. He won't give you the big blowups, and now he's slotting in for Albert Alzolay. Now I get to decide if I get to hear the news. If it's like a 2 or 3 week thing with Alzolay, then maybe I hold him a little bit. But the one thing about these leagues in general is, that, and I've had to learn this quickly because I've only been on the NFBC platform for like 3 years. And the thing that I learned was that I nursed guys too long.
Right.
And you have a very short bench. You cannot nurse guys too long. There's so much value out on the, on like you guys do this awesome FAAB podcast. It's like, there's so much value out there on a weekly basis where you could just pick a guy up for a week, like streaming type stuff, or just continue to take shots at upside. Okay, the Albert Alzolay thing didn't work out. Maybe Edouard Cabrera is still out there. Like, maybe some other young guy that didn't get drafted in the thing, and I pick him up and nurse him for 2 weeks, and then he didn't get the job or he's hurt, next guy. And there's so many hurt pitchers that
especially
don't
in the
hold
first,
on to a hurt pitcher for 2 months. If Alzolay, if the news is true that it's Alzolay for 2 months,
it's not worth it.
He's gone. Yeah.
Sure. We saw what he did last year, and he's going to be one of the guys that I alluded to as far as like somebody broke out last year, that when he came back from the blister, he, at least when he first came back, he wasn't the same as he was breaking up before the blister. So coming back from that injury, it's, even if he's out for 2 months, it doesn't mean that in the third month, he's going to come back ready to go at 100% either. Obviously something you have to monitor.
You'd want to know that velo. So then it's like 2.5 months. It's like, all right. Now I just wasted a roster spot for 2.5 months and he comes back at 91 miles an hour and I can barely start him.
And then, of course, the nice thing in the rules of the NFBC state, and I think I've said this more than times than I can count, but is you can't pick up prospects in season if they haven't made their major league debut. But if you draft them and drop them, you can pick them up. So Jeremy Pena doesn't start on the roster. You drop him, but you're keeping an eye on him because you are aware that you drop them, he's available. Mm-hmm. You might be able to get him a week early or at least at a lower fab cost. Same thing would be said for me for Nolan Gorman. If I drop him in the first week, I'll keep an eye on him. Maybe you don't have to spend.
And maybe other people don't even think that they can pick up Pena because they forgot I drafted him or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So something definitely keep an eye on. As we say in season, always watch your drops. Almost as much as the players that you win in Fab, see who everybody else is dropping as well.
Yeah, that's a good one. I don't think I do that enough.
Immediately, you can. And the NFBC does a great job with Fab and their YUX and all that. And they added this year, you can actually transfer your Fab bids from league to league.
Oh, I like that. Oh my God, I have so many leagues on that platform now.
And so more shout out to Derek at NFBC. Derek, it's going to save a lot of people a lot of time on Sunday evenings for sure.
Yeah, that's a good one. Nice innovation.
A couple of weeks ago, we had Michael Simeone on the show and we talked about streaming pitchers. It was interesting to hear Michael actually say he actually prefers to stream hitters and not pitchers. I mean, it was interesting to hear somebody whose name is SP Streamer
talking about.
But what I wanted to talk about today are some of those pitchers that we might be getting off the wire early in the season that we might not want to stream. We might want to hold on to a little bit longer. And because they're showing us something that maybe we didn't see originally or something that we just weren't thinking about, somebody that kind of came out of nowhere. And so I wanted to pick your brain about the opportunity that players get or they force the issue and what we should be, you know, what we should have seen out of some players last year that broke out. And then I got a couple of groups of players that are definitely going to be on the wire in most leagues that people might be want to keep an eye out for and get your take on whether or not the probability of them actually being one of those players more than just a streamer. Let me get your take on a couple of guys real quick that we saw go above and beyond maybe what everybody was expecting and who were readily available on the wire, at least at the beginning of the season, in at least 12 teamers and in a lot of main event leagues as well. So those 15 teamers. So, of course, we had Wade Miley, who had his no hitter early on in the season and was pretty steady for the most of the year. Adam Wainwright, who is one of the best pitchers in baseball last year. Kyle Gibson, who had a little bit of resurgence between Texas and Philadelphia. And then we have our younger guys who kind of I want to say came out of nowhere, but definitely were off a lot of radars until they started making their debut early on in the season. That's Edward Alzolay, as we talked about earlier, Huascar Ulloa prior to breaking his hand, and then Luis Garcia of Houston. And that's not to even mention Shane McClanahan, Logan Gilbert, the guys we expected to come up and have success as rookie prospects. Of these groups, or if there's a pitcher that I'm missing, really, like what made these guys special? What was it that almost we should have seen it coming that we may be able to take away and learn from it? So as we're looking at the guys that are coming up this year in April and May.
I think with Kyle Gibson, the thing that comes to mind is just a lot of pitches and decent command. When you've got a lot of pitches, the thing that I think is that any one of them, you could do a tweak and be like, oh yeah, my slider's new this year. Or I changed something on my curveball. You've got all these pitches that are percolating near league average. And if one of them just pops and is better in a given year, I think that you could be a lot better as a pitcher. So I'm trying to think of somebody who might be like that. Chris Flexen this year strikes me like a little bit like that. Carlos Hernandez, he was drafted. So that's a little bit high, but he's got a lot of pitches, doesn't have really good command, but any one of those pitches takes a step forward and he's going to be a lot better. Miguel Yajure is a little bit in that prospect bin, but also this guy who has five pitches. And if any one of those five pitches takes a step forward, I could see that working out. Who are some of the other names we had? Zach Eflin is also somebody I think of as like Kyle Gibson. It's funny they're on the same team. Just like none of their pitches is amazing. They're not going to be an ace's ace, but they could just make, and it's really hard to predict this. Even with my model, the pitching with the stuff and stuff, it's not going to stand out. Zach Eflin doesn't really stand out except he has really good command. But if he made a tweak to one pitch, maybe everything comes together a little bit for him. And there's always like that one shining season where it's like Kyle Gibson has had a couple of these nice, really nice seasons. And then the rest of them, you're like, those weren't so good. T. Brubaker has really good command and a couple pitches that he could tweak. So those are some of the new versions. But you know, who are some of the other names? You had Albert Alzolay.
On the younger side, yeah, Alzolay.
That's more by Miguel Yajure, I think. Okay. That's like one little tweak. He might not even have to do the tweak. His short sample numbers are really good. He might just need the opportunity.
Opportunity was all about came up and he felt like he was just like the eighth option that Atlanta might have had in their system to come up between Kyle Muller, Tucker Davidson, who still had some time in the rotation, and others. And so the fact that he was able to come up and take advantage of that opportunity when it was given and basically forced Atlanta not to take him out of that option until he literally forced the issue. And then Luis Garcia, who didn't start, he started one game in 2020 in the shortened season in Houston. And then literally, I think he started every single outing for the Astros last year, if I'm not mistaken, and ended up going 155 innings.
I was all over him. I think that's a Yajure, Ronzi Contreras situation where I had a real small sample stuff number and it was really good. Contreras and Yajure both have above average stuff in tiny samples. And they are, I put depth chart on my rankings so that you can see Ronzi Contreras is the eighth starting pitcher on the depth chart in Pittsburgh. So don't like get too excited about him. How far is it from eighth to fifth? Like, for example, I had Reaver San Martin at around 127. That's not super exciting. That doesn't say draft him. And the reason I didn't, because he wasn't in the rotation yet and he doesn't have amazing numbers. Probably going to go up a little bit. Now he's in the rotation.
he might be number two when it's all said and done. We'll see.
Yeah, it didn't take that long. I had another guy that just got traded into a starting rotation. Justin Dunn, I think, was like five or six, and now he's probably in that rotation too. There's a lot of movement that's going to happen in the next couple of days, the next couple of weeks that's going to change things. And so that's something you have to think about. But I think depth chart, another way I see these pitchers that you're talking about is like, this is definitely Alzolay, which is six and seven starters are still going to give you like 100 to 120 innings. That's actually what we need from six and seven starters. I think it's 200 innings combined in the average team from their 6 and 7 starter. So you might look at the 6 and 7 starter and say, we're not in the rotation. Luis Gil on the Yankees, not in the rotation right now. At danger of being pushed further down, even if they sign somebody. But at this point, there's not that much left.
Not many left, yeah, on the pitching side, sure.
but 7th in the rotation, you think, what does that mean? That actually means he could get 100 innings this year. And if he gets 100 innings, my stuff model says he's really good.
You're going to get good production out of those 100 innings. You're not going to get 200 innings of whatever. At least 100 you can at least in the bank, yeah.
But it's still hard to draft. Like, I love Ronzi Contreras. I love Luis Gil. I love Hurray. But right now, like, you're not going to draft them at the beginning of the season because they'll probably do that thing where you got to stay down 2 weeks. We're going to want that extra year of control, or you're not ready, or go work on your breaking ball, whatever it is that they tell people when they go down. And then automatically, you know, 3 weeks to a month later, they're ready to go. They're just, it was hard to figure out where to put them on the rankings, but I wanted to put them there. Like Matt Brash in Seattle, like, I really like him. But not in the rotation yet. So you can't, in this NFBC format, you can't really pick him unless you're in like a draft and hold or something. But like, you can't pick him. So I didn't know. It was really hard to draft him. But I found a place around the 120s in my rankings where anyone is listening to this and wants to look for guys that I think will be really interesting down the road, they're in the sort of 120s and 130s. That's where I thought, you're not going to draft him, but you'll remember the name because you'll be like, why is this guy so high up?
Yeah. And then at the very least, depending on the format that you play on, add him to your watch list. If you have a really deep bench, then yeah, maybe you pick him up in the first week and you stash him if you have the opportunity. Of course, like you said, in NFBC, stashing is a lot harder. I usually like to say, like, one, maybe if you have a perfectly healthy roster, you get two stashes.
Who has a perfectly
healthy? No. These are the things that don't exist anymore.
That's the one thing it's the one thing I've gone away from. In like, even maybe last year or the year, like last year I did really well, so I don't think I did it as much. But 2 years ago, I would have drafted Ronzi Contreras and been like, I've got a great guy here. And then like, 3 weeks later, I'd be like, oh, do I drop him? And then maybe drop him. And then he comes up 2 weeks later and I'm like, oh, come on. Now he's on someone else's roster. So you like, there's like, sometimes there's a cadence to it where it's like, don't show your hand just yet. You like Reaver San Martin? Fine. Leave him out there. He's actually in a rotation, so maybe you could draft him on your bench. You can like Miguel Yuhuri, just plant that and put it away.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
I got a pair of guys right here that they fit into that sixth or even seventh man in the rotation that I want to get your take as far as who do you think it has a better shot of giving you productive, even if it's just 100 innings. And it's the battle of the Tylers. So Tyler McGill that I talked about earlier, he's been drafted pretty much everywhere. As I looked this up, he was 94% rostered in main event qualifiers. So these are the 15 team standalone leagues, but there's still 15 teamers. 100% rostered in the online championships, which are the 12 teamers. And then there's Tyler Beede, who is like this everybody's sleeper as far as in draft champion leagues and those draft and holds, not really being drafted all that much though in fab leagues. 29% rostered in MEQs and 9% rostered in those 12 team online championships that have happened so far. Beede, as you alluded to, probably got knocked out of the opportunity of at least being in the starting five, if not starting six, with the addition of Carlos Rodon and Carlos Martinez waiting for him for that spot as well. And then Tyler McGill probably getting bumped out of at least the top five in New York with the trade of Chris Bassett. McGill made his debut last year, collecting 99 strikeouts and 89 2/3, and saw his K to walk rate dip under 20%. And Kevin was talking about him last week as a late round flyer for a strikeout upside. Both these guys probably not going to be starting in the rotation. McGill, I doubt he starts in AAA, but there's always the possibility. Beattie is coming back from Tommy John surgery, so they have obviously have their warts in their opportunity and what they're coming back from. Which one of these guys do you think has a better shot of giving you a productive 100 or plus innings come when the season actually gets going?
I get accused of being the king of waffles on my podcast. I'm going to come straight. I've in my mind, I have no doubts. Like I could be totally wrong. We'll see what that happens at the end of the year, but I have no doubts right now that it's Tyler McGill. 100% Tyler McGill is the one I want. I have a model, and the model says that Tyler Beattie's fastball has terrible shape and that he has no command. Now, we can debate the shape maybe, because maybe there's different models out there, different stuff models, different attitudes. He has good velo, you know? So you could say, hey, that's still pretty good fastball with the velo. But the bad command, nobody can debate. Come on, there's like so much. There's like just look at the walk rates, man. So me personally, I think he's got two things going against him. I have Sammy Long ahead of him. And I think Sammy Long is maybe a little bit more boring than I at first thought. He's kind of curveball fastball guy. I'm not sure he's better than that. However, it's a good curveball. It's not a terrible shape on the fastball. It looks like a league average guy. And I think they're going to lean heavily on him. I think he's going to have options. This is something that'll happen this year where you can't option a player down 15 times. But I think Sammy Long will get optioned up and down 5 times, the exact amount of times you can do it. And I think Sammy Long is their emergency. But they also signed Carlos Martinez and Jacob Junis, who I think they're going to keep on the roster as the sort of emergency reliever, 3-inning, could be starter guys that they keep around on the roster. Phantom ILs. Like, nobody's going to bat an eye if you put Carlos Martinez on the IL. You know, like you could do it repeatedly. You could just say whatever, you know, like any part of him hurts.
And did they change the IL back to 10 days or is that just for hitters?
It's 10 days for hitters, 15 days for pitchers. So you're going to have to massage it. But if there's any team that's going to massage it, it's the Giants. They're amazing at this. So I can already see it in my head. At any given time, one of these three guys is on the roster. Jacob Junis, Carlos Martinez, and Sammy Long. And all you got to do is option Sammy down, take Junis off the IL. Oh, he's hurt. Put him back on the IL. Carlos Martinez comes off the IL. Oh, he's hurt. Bring up Sammy Long. They got a guy in the front office who does this. So I just don't see where Tyler Beattie falls into that unless there's two or three injuries, which they could, you know, they have Carlos would do. They have an older rotation. Even Logan Webb has had the shoulder injury, but I firmly have him almost like an eighth Tyler Beattie because you've got this sort of Carlos Martinez, Jacob Junis situation. With Tyler McGill, what I see is not the greatest fastball in the world, but not terrible. Really good secondaries. I think that's two secondaries. I think he's got really good secondaries and he's got good command. He's almost in that kind of Eflin space a little bit where he's like, here's a guy who's got an arsenal. He's got like 3 or 4 pitches and he's got good command. And we'll see what the stuff does. Maybe he worked on weighted balls and comes back with 20 pounds of muscle heavier and we get some good velo readings. But either way, he's got a good foundation. And then I see some of the biggest injury risk in baseball ahead of him.
Right.
Carlos Carrasco, above average injury risk by ours. And we couldn't even figure it out. We had Jeffrey Zimmerman do some injury stuff. We couldn't even figure Carlos Carrasco out because, like, who comps on leukemia? And then what do we have here? Tyler Walker. Taiwan Walker was supposed to be the least injury risk, and he's coming off of surgery. Oh, my gosh. Maybe he misses the beginning of the season. I think McGill might start the season in the rotation if Walker needs a blow to get ready fully. And then you've got, of course, Jacob DeGrom. And Max Scherzer, even the back. So you've got a really veteran rotation there. And I think McGill is one of those 6 starters that really like pushes it, like 120 innings, maybe even. I think that's the one I want. Although I think this is a question for you too. Is like, isn't that kind of hard to own all year? Because you're kind of always wondering if it's more like a guy you pick up and drop off the waiver wire 20 times.
Yeah. This is going to be a guy that you're not going to want to. You're going to want to hold on to him, though, because when he does
produce, more to pick up again when he's back up,
he's going to be like the Austin Gombers of the world where it's like, all right, if he's going to get a two, if you pick the wrong week to bid on him and you get that 2 start. Maybe he doesn't start both of those starts and you paid triple digits for that 2 start and you don't get him and you're just
Then you're mad and you drop him, and then he gets a 2-start the next week, and you're just like on someone else's roster, and you're just like, come on.
So you might want to hold on to him a little bit longer and just miss out on something that on your bench when you decide he's not worth it to put into your lineup, just so you can save that fab. And if you're managing your fab properly throughout the course of the year, and you know, you're not spending $100, $200 in one particular week, and you're using your waterfall bids, and you're finding the backups to everything that you want, you can get away with maybe once or twice getting that triple digit bid. I don't think I had a triple digit bid all year last year. Wow. Just because
I'm a little bit more like that. Yeah, I love to 31, 29, 26, 20, 23. I've got a bunch of options here. Let me just give me whichever one is doesn't cost me 130.
Yeah.
But I also think Paul Sporer has an interesting term for this called team streamers, which is basically a guy that you have on your bench and you don't want to have to start him every time, but you can bring him up sure. to the good starts, but then you don't drop him because he's too valuable to drop. And I kind of like Chris Paddock on my team is in that space of that team streamer. I think Chris Paddock could be a guy, like, I don't want to start him in LA
no.
if he is healthy and is on the team. So I think he'll be up and down. And if he's hurt, then I'll just drop him and try to find another team streamer. Then Tyler would be a perfect pickup for that.
Yeah. And NFBC, the only run in you get with this kind of strategy is that, again, your bench is only so deep. You only have 7 spots on your bench. Mm-hmm. You're either holding guys like this or you're stashing guys, or you have somebody who's injured, but is too valuable to drop. If you drafted Tatis, you're still going to hold on to him to see, unless you get word that he's out for the entire year. You're still going to, there were people who held on to Eloy last year, even because they paid such a high draft cost.
I held on to Shane Bieber for way too long, dude.
It's just really hard to like, it's a sunk cost fallacy. It's like, right. You have to realize
but
that. But
there's also these like breathless updates where it's like, oh, Shane Bieber threw. And you're like, oh, he's going to. Wait, no.
It is way more difficult with the pitcher. With a hitter, you had a better sense of like, all right, you're going to be out for three months.
Yeah,
then go. Fine. You're at least out for 3 months.
Yeah. Yeah. Pitchers, it's you never know. What happens to me on my pitching bench, and I usually try to have at least 4 pitching slots. If it's 4 out of 7, I go more heavy on pitching because of all these things we're talking about. And I think it devolves really quickly into these 4 roles for my 4 spots. My injured guy, my team streamer, my pre-closer, because I don't want to pay closer fab. So I have a pre-closer on my bench. And then like one fungible spot
stream through or you
that can, I'm just yeah. like always looking at and being like, do I keep that guy or is he gone? And that's how quickly your roster spots freeze up. If you think about it, 3 of those 4 spots are harder to move because you're like, oh, but Fairbanks could close next week. Could be next week. Guy in front of him is no good.
Yeah, no, we talk about that in season. Kevin's always talking about he picked up Hansel Robles as the same thing. It's a pre-closer mm-hmm. at one point when he was still in Minnesota. And we would talk about, hey, who are guys on the wire that we could speculate on becoming a closer next week or the week after that you want to pick up now or buck? And we'd always find somebody. And I'm like, Kevin, are you going to pick them up? He's like, no, I already have Robles. As soon as I switch it up, it's like the scene from Office Space where it's like you go into one lane and then the traffic all starts 100%. Moving and you move to the other lane, your lane you were just in moving. So as soon as I drop Robles, he's going to get a closer. So I'm like, not worth it.
It is worth it to try and do that, though, because the price for a newly minted closer is astronomical. Geez. And sometimes they don't
especially
even last a week.
Yeah. Enter Julian Meatherweather just entered the chat.
Yeah, 100%.
We all saw that. Yeah. All right. I know I don't have that much time with you. So I want to get one more grouping at least in here that I'm curious to get your take on. Oh, I'm going to debate which one I want to do. Let's just go with the post-hype prospect grouping that I put together. This kind of fits into not so much the Alzolay and the Luis Garcias because, you know, maybe Huascar Noah, they kind of nowhere but was a prospect. But these are guys who we all knew. We all know their names because they were at the top of prospect rankings and they were supposed to be awesome and they just haven't produced yet. So we have Spencer Howard in Texas as a reclamation project down there. Matt Manning in Detroit. And then Nate Pearson in Toronto. I think of the three, Manning is the only one with the guaranteed or close to guaranteed rotation piece. Manning probably is the number four. If you have a different take, you can let me know. But Howard obviously moved to Texas as a way to remake himself in his upper levels. He's been great. But in the lower levels, he really wasn't all that much. The thing with Howard, I noticed, is that he's never spent more than like 35 innings at any one stop, whether it be a team or a stop in the minors or what have you. So I'm curious to know if that's in his head, where it's like he's not ever been able to get comfortable long enough to actually get anything going. Manning, I'm curious to see what he can do with Tucker Barnhart behind the plate. The same can be said about pretty much everybody in that rotation, Casey Mize, Tarek Skubal, etc. And then Nate Pearson battled so many injuries last year and didn't make any starts and throughout the course of, at least at the major league level, and even half of his AAA appearances were from as a reliever as well during 2021. And of course, with the addition of Kevin, even though they lost Robbie Ray in the rotation, they gained Kevin Gausman and just signed Yusei Kikuchi. And they have Ross Stripling, who's competing for a spot there as well. So curious to see if he actually starts at the major league level and if, or they keep him back at AAA as well. Of these three, quote, post-hype prospects, what's your take on who has the best opportunity to, as I put it, become undroppable at some point early on in the season, if any of them, to be honest?
So my absolute favorite, like I have a very clear favorite in terms of talent and I think probably some opportunity, but just talent. So my very clear favorite is Nate Pearson on talent. I think he's got absolutely the best talent in the group. He's got the best fastball. He's got really good secondaries as well. Obviously got the biggest flaw, which is staying healthy, and also the worst opportunity because he's not even in the rotation to begin the season, whereas these other guys get some opportunity probably from day one to show what they've got. For Matt Manning, the opportunity is the best. It's in a nice stadium. They have every reason to want him to succeed. He was a high draft pick. He's coming through their development process. I think this actually kind of matters a little bit. They want him to succeed because he'd be like, hey, look, we did it. This is a Tigers draft pick. He went through the Tigers development process and became a good one. So I think he has the best opportunity of the three. I think he's maybe got the worst talent of the three, honestly. I see an average fastball and a slightly above average slider, and the other pitches are just boring, and it doesn't come with enough command where I can say, oh yeah, he could be like a Gibson type or something, like, or an Eflin, where he's like got great command and enough pitches to make it work. Like, I don't see that with Manning either. So Howard comes in between. He's the oatmeal in this one, where he's got a pretty good opportunity, maybe not as good as Manning's, because if it doesn't work out, hey, oh, he was just to throw in a trade or whatever. It wasn't the biggest deal. I guess he came over
in the Gibson trade.
Yeah. They traded. I think they will want to give him some opportunity, but they also have a lot of other guys like Alexi and guys coming up. They could just do the up and down thing where they're like, oh, he just needs more time in the minors, blah, blah, blah. In any case, I think he's got the second kind of best opportunity, the second best stuff. I mean, the one thing I did like from Howard is that he started throwing a cutter when he had landed in Texas. And it was, so you already have this sort of pre-notion of like, maybe this is why he succeeds, is like he started changing his mix as soon as he landed in Texas. So I like Howard a little bit. I think it's kind of hard to think about who you'd want to own, because Pearson, you're going to own, you're going to know you don't get him from day one.
Mm-hmm. He's a stash. Sure.
He's a stash. And you're just going to be like, how long can I stash this? Howard, if you draft him, at least you can start getting information. You just want information sometimes. You're just like, I want to see him for three starts. I want to see what his velo is. I want to see if he changes his mix again. But I think of the three, I'm most likely to own Pearson because I have a little bit of a problem with like 20 to stash high upside arms like that.
You're not alone. I'm 72% rostered in those main event qualifiers I was talking about, 21% rostered in online championships. So he's being drafted in one of five 12 teamers as well. The other two guys, Howard and Manning, both have not been drafted in an online championship yet, and only 6% of those 17 main event qualifiers. So I think that ends up being like two out of those 17.
Stripling is a veteran. He has no more options left. So he's going to do the kind of Carlos Martinez, Jake Junis thing from San Francisco, where he's going to be on the roster. And if they just need one start, they'll go to Stripling. But as soon as they need more than one start, as soon as Ryu, Gausman, Berrios, Kikuchi, someone goes down for 3 weeks, it's Pearson.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think that you're right in that when Pearson is up, he has the strongest possibility of producing.
Being like
a standout guy, and not wanting to be dropped. Like once he's up, you're not going to want to drop him. So that answers my question.
That was the question.
He's going to be the one that.
Yeah, with Howard Manning, you might be like, was it a good start? Was it a good matchup? Or was this, I drop him for the next good start, right? The next good opportunity.
But at the beginning of the season, I think you're right. It's like Howard and Manning, at least you're getting something. They're going to be pitching. You're going to get something out of it. So even if Howard gets relegated to like 3 innings or 4 innings here or there, at least you're getting those 3 or 4 innings out of them. I can't let you go without actually asking you a beer related question. Mm. I don't get to talk about beer enough.
You might have heard it. You were listening that I opened one.
I did. I've had mine open the whole time. I've actually, this is my first beer in like, I don't know, like over a month.
Wow.
I get gout every once in a while. So when I do get a flare up, I can't touch it, unfortunately.
Yes.
And that started about, I think, a little over 10 years ago, and it's not a good thing to get. So I worked in the brewing industry for minus the last 2 years, the 15 years prior to that.
It's like alcohol and fatty foods, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, the things that they have at breweries.
Yeah, the only things, really.
Yeah. Do you have any quinoa?
Yeah, there are plenty of breweries that dabble in quinoa, especially in the Bay Area.
That's right.
Yeah, I lived in Oakland, California for a long time and right south of where you are, if I'm not mistaken.
North.
So I worked with Drake's Brewing Company. So I want to give them a shout out.
Drake's. Yeah, and Drake's is good.
I wanted to live vicariously through you and get your take on what's the best beer that you've had by them recently. And again, I haven't had any of their beer in the last 4 years after I moved to Indianapolis. So I'm again living vicariously through you because I miss them terribly. So shout out to everybody over at Drake's.
I had a classic from them. It's in my fridge. I got one of the 4-pack left, and I think you might recognize this one, Aromacoma.
Nice. I love Aromacoma.
Probably their best. I had the orange can, which I think is the classic. They had a green one, which I think might be the double. But so I had the single Aromacoma, and I think it's their best beer.
Yeah.
I also like they have like a Summer Slammer, like a Summer Crusher, like a 5%.
Yeah, their kickback. That's their session IPA. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that one too. Those are the two that I buy from them most often. But at the ballpark, 1500.
Oh yeah, classic.
1500s at the ballpark. So
if you want to get saucy, you can go Denogenizer. And
I don't want to get saucy every time. I have kids. I have kids. They'd ask why Dad was asleep on the couch.
That is fair.
I like the 1500 at Oakland A's games. I will imbibe one of those.
Nice.
It's one of the best beers at the Oakland A's games, actually.
Their former brewmaster John Gulli is opening a brew house. I believe it's called Bricks in West Oakland. So
all right,
check them out.
Look out for that.
Supposedly right down the street from where the possible new stadium could possibly one day be built.
I know that spot. All right. I know where he is. Yeah.
I mean, so look out for him.
He said it's called Bricks.
B-R-I-X. Yeah. Nice. So shout out to them.
I will look for that.
And then Kevin wanted to know when you guys are going to get a beer at Big Island Brew House on the Big Island, because Kevin is moving back to Hawaii.
I'm so happy he's moving back. He seemed happy when he was there. It seemed like a good place for him. It's a place I'd like to end up. I was born in Jamaica, and there's something very similar about Hawaii when I land. I almost have that feeling of coming on home. I think it's because you smell the salt water and it's like the humidity, right? Like it's just like it's an island just like Jamaica. And so I feel very at home in Hawaii when I'm there. And he seemed like he was at home there. So the only problem with the Big Island Brew House is it's far away. My family's in Kona, and I don't know if he's going moving back to Hilo where he was. But the nice thing about it is it's about halfway between both of us. So I will do this with him. But I'm going back in June. So Kevin, if you're listening to this, if you're going to be already back in June, hit me up.
There you go. That's because Kevin is probably one of the nicest people I've ever met. And so the fact that you tell me that you've never known him happier than when he lived in Hawaii, I am very interested to know Kevin when he's even happier than he is now. So
yeah.
That is
he was very chill. You just got to imagine the Kevin in flip-flops.
There you go. I can there. Imagine that. Yes. That's not a far off.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, man, so much for taking the time. I know I let everybody know that everybody knows who you are and where they can find your work. But is there anything that you're working on specifically in the preseason? Maybe another 5,000 word essay on moves that anything that anybody should be keeping an eye out for at The Athletic or anywhere else?
No, there's one thing is if you are thinking about subscribing, it does help if you subscribe off of one of my articles. I get credit for it. So we've got some good deals. I don't know what the current deal is. You can keep an eye out for $2, $3 a month. Whatever it is. And so if you're thinking about it, the nice way to put your toe in the water is to listen to Rates and Barrels. We talk about a lot of the pieces we write and a lot of stuff we see on the site. And if that sounds interesting to you, then you can jump in off of Rates and Barrels or off of one of my pieces. So thank you so much for having me on and big love to Kevin. And we'll have a beer with him.
There you go. Nice.
And I'll have a beer with you the next time. Maybe I'll come out for Glarf. We're trading you for VR. Yeah. We're gonna maybe install DVR in bar.
Yeah, and you guys,
we're sending Maddie Wood out to you guys. Yeah,
so, I think yeah.
Good luck with him. He's a shark, man. You gotta watch out for him. I think he's one of Maine, dude. You gotta watch out for that guy.
He won barf too, didn't he? He won barf at one point. He mentioned that at least. So we'll.
Oh, did he mention it?
Yeah, you mentioned it. Came up random conversation. Who are
I'll
you?
Get there. I think I was barf. Third last year. I need. This is my year. As long as I need Acuna, man. And they every time he sends out a video about how good he looks, I'm like, he's gonna be back.
Yeah,
just DH him for a while.
Yeah, I've obviously been in contact with a lot of the leagues that I've drafted so far, and only one of them is a trading league. And so anybody who drafted Tatis in the first three or four, I've heard about it for sure. But the one trading league is drafting right now is on Fantrax, and that news came out literally like four picks after. He picked Tatis in the second. He's like, hey, by the way, I'm open for a trade. No, really?
Yeah.
So it'll be active.
That's what the perils of what we do. We got to draft early to help people make their drafts. But
exactly.
Good luck to everybody drafting. You've got the next couple of weeks. It's going to be really fun. Just don't draft a guy who gets injured the same day as you draft.
Yeah, the best tip we could possibly give.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks so much, man.
Thanks for having me.
Hopefully we'll talk again soon. That is going to wrap it up for episode 51 of On the Wire. Please make sure to subscribe, share, and review the podcast wherever you're listening. Even if your review is a general tweet and not a specific platform, it still goes a long way to let us know what you think about the show, how we can improve, and what you like about it. Make sure you're listening to the great podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network by following at Pitcher List Pods on the Twitter for updates and subscribing, of course, to both the Pitcher List Fantasy Baseball Podcast feed and the Pitcher List General Baseball Podcast feed as well for all of our non-fantasy related baseball pods. You can follow myself on the Twitter at 80grade. It's all spelled out. Kevin Hasting is at Hasting Kevin. Once again, thanks to our guest, Tino Saris. He's at Tino Saris. And on behalf of Kevin, I am Adam Howe. And with that, we bid you goodbye.